हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 3. Mangalacharan by... Mangalacharan by Sri Baladeva Vibhushana. Okay. Vyomari Vishayar Gobhir Bibhart Bibharti Vi Jaghana Ya Satarn Mad Vishayan Bhashvan Krishna Prani Hanish Yati. May the brilliant son of Lord Krishna, who, with rays of logic, destroys a host of misconceptions about ether and the other elements, destroy the misconceptions in my heart. Overview of Adikaranas. 1. Ether is created, 1 through 6. Air is created, 7. Brahman has no origin, 8. Fire is manifested, Sutra 9. Water is created, 10. Earth is created, and the word Anna in Chandogya Upanishad means earth, 11. The elements are manifested from the Lord, 12 through 14. All words are primary names of Brahman, primarily names of Brahman. Secondarily, they indicate other things, 15. The jiva is eternal without beginning. 16. The jivas are both knowers and knowledge and knowers. 17. And the jivas are atomic. Oh, okay, more. 12. Adikarna 12. The jivas are eternally conscious, 26 to 29. The jivas are not all-pervading, Sutra 30. The jiva is a performer of actions, 31 to 40. The jiva is an amsha of Brahman, 41 to 43. The avatars of Brahman are not like the jivas, for the avatars are Brahman, 44 to 48. The jivas are not identically the same, 49 to 51. Adikarna, Nanu Sharana, summary of the thematic, Adikarnas. Adikarnas 1 through 8, Sutras 1 through 15, refutation of atheistic conclusions on the origin of the elements, Pancha Mahabhuta, footnote 2. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana describes the Supreme Lord's act of creating the material elements. From false ego and the mode of ignorance are manifest the five sense objects and the five gross material elements. First, the gross material elements are manifest, then they are transformed into the sense objects, which are called tanmatras. As milk is transformed into yogurt, and as a newly conceived embryo is transformed into a child, so the gross elements are transformed into the sense objects. The gross elements are called bhutas. The sense objects are subtle, and the elements are gross. This sequence in which the gross elements are manifest is described in a number of different ways. It is said that from the Supreme Lord, ether was manifest. From ether, air was manifest. From air, the next element was manifest, and so on. In this way, the Shruti Shastra describes the creation of the gross material elements. In the Subala Upanishad, it is said, from false ego, the five gross sense objects are manifest. Five gross sense objects are manifest. Elements are manifest. Mm-hmm. So the five gross sense are manifest, and then you get the idea the elements come. From the sense objects.
From the sense objects, the five gross elements.
That's the next one. But in the previous sentence, it probably just doesn't need to be repeated, right? Are manifest. From the sense objects, the five gross elements. This is also described in the Gopaltapani Upanishad. From false ego, the five sense elements are manifest. From the sense objects, are manifest one after another the gross material elements. From false ego is manifest sound. From sound is manifest ether. From ether are manifest sound and touch. From ether is manifest air. From air is manifest sound, touch, and form. From air is manifest fire. From fire manifest sound, touch, form, taste. From fire is manifest water. From water manifest sound, touch, form, taste, and fragrance. From water is manifest earth. The five elements have specific qualities. Ether is sound and touch. It does not have any other sense objects. Air has coolness to the touch, but does not have fragrance or warmth. Fire has warmth and light. Water has coolness to the touch, but it does not have fragrance. Earth has fragrance. In other words, if your water has fragrance, there's a problem.
We can add it to something.
That's as long as you added it, not that it came that way. After the gross elements were created, the sense objects were manifest within them. After creating them, Lord Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, divided the five gross material elements into two parts. Then he divided them again, so now there are four parts. In this way, he divided the gross material elements. In the scriptures, it is said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead divided the five material elements, each into two parts. Then each of those he divided again. Then he looked at how he had divided the five elements. Vedanta Shamataka 4, 9 to 12.
The last sentence in the Old Testament?
Hmm?
The last sentence? Then he looked at how.
He had divided. Yeah, yeah. Because it's always you do it and then you check back. You know, how does it look? It's looking okay.
This book, Vedanta Shamataka, what it is?
Baladevibhusha is like I'm not sure exactly, but it's like a simpler commentary on Vedanta Sutra. It's dealing with the points.
It is basically dealing with the same five topics of Bhagavad Gita: Ishvara, Prakriti, Jiva, Kala, and Time.
Okay. So. Yes. So then, in dealing with those, then you establish the principles. Then you can understand how the other schools aren't. You know what I'm saying? Because the whole point is that these six schools, or all the other schools, you compare them against the actual Vedanta philosophy. Right? So that's what you have to do. You don't have to do something else. You know? Means what they want you to do is argue on their point with that logic. But you actually don't. You just have to establish what is actually the fact. Because the point is it's not a matter of logic will establish the truth. We may use logic as an instrument, but it's not that the logic will establish the truth. You have to present the truth to establish the truth. Right? So then what's given there, then that will define everything very nicely. Then you can go through the process of comparing them to each of the points of the other people, others are making. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes, because if you know that, then you can establish. And then we also see, it's just a technique in discussion, is that if there's something illogical in their point, then you just deal with that. You know, it already disproves itself, so why have to bring in something else? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like the guy comes in with a stick, you take the stick and then beat him, right? You know, so then, you know, why do you have to bring your own stick? You know, so that's it. Is that right?
Well, yesterday's footnote, it was mentioned that Vyasdev was like weeping. Not
weeping.
Weeping, yes. Not mentioned.
When you want to know why he's weeping.
That means he has written such an amazing text like Vedanta Sutra. Bhagavatam also says that he was dissatisfied. And then the Bhagavatam was revealed.
So but you're saying such an amazing text. What's amazing about it?
Like all the philosophies are being like thoroughly disproved and Vedanta philosophy being established.
So why is that? Why is that special?
Because after writing this, still he was dissatisfied.
No, you're not. Why is Vedanta Sutra special? He's defeated all these schools. Okay, what's so special about that?
They're all atheistic and not completely giving the truth.
Okay, and so then what's the glory in dealing in that? Like Krishna said previously, that by his arrangement, all these different philosophies come up, and then they all sit around and argue over them. Right? So what's the specialness there? Vyasadeva's better at arguing, okay. So what's special?
He's like properly delineated absolute truth.
So he's properly just, so the logic and the technical logic that he goes through is just very excellent.
It's whatever we have studied till now, like it appears very helpful.
Yes, yes. So my point is that the amazing, you know, a way and how he so simply and directly goes about defeating these schools through using logic. Right?
Primary is about Lord. He's like, we are coming to know how the creation is, how Lord is, what is our reality. And that is like very, along with that, the other schools which are putting, like giving arguments, that is also defeated by the secondary aspect.
Okay, but then if it's about the Lord and all that, so that's the glorious thing. Not all the logic.
No.
Okay, you're changing your approach. So it's about the Lord, but in this presentation, do we bring out that aspect of the Achintabheda Veda Tattva and the Lord's position, his glory as a person?
Second part, no. First part, I mean, Achintabheda Veda is explained. Lord's as a person is not explained.
Then, if Lord's as a person is not explained, then how is that going to be the most satisfying? You understand?
Mm.
Not that it's not wonderful and not that it's not important. It means all the Vaishnava schools have a commentary on it.
Mm.
It's important. But because that's all the farther it's taken, he defeats those philosophies. But in it, it's not specifically establishing the glories of Krishna. It'll do it by explaining the one, it's done the other, but it's not necessarily so obvious. That's why then Bhagavatam. Not so much.
Okay.
You don't have to. Means these guys don't. He's in the commentary by Baladev. He may be using, but it's not the Vyasadeva's explaining it, right? So we're with the understanding of Bhagavatam, we're explaining Vedanta Sutra. So it is already included in the commentaries, but Vyasadeva wasn't explaining that.
Mm.
Right? So that's why that whole pastime with Narad Muni in the 56th chapter in the first canto.
And how this Achintabheda Veda Tattva is relevant for developing the relationship with Lord as a person?
See, as if there's a non-difference, but there's a difference, right? If there's only difference, what kind of a relationship can you establish? Yeah. And if there's only similarity, right, then it'll be informal. Right. But we're trying to get to the sweetness. So that means it's the same and different. So that'll bring out the sweetness aspect. Does that make sense? Good? Good. Okay. This section deals broadly with two schools, namely the Vaisheshikas being the prominent and the Shankyites being the trivial protesters. trivial protesta. They're very small. The signs aren't so big. The Sutrakar refutes the wranglers of their fabricated opinions to establish Brahman, the cause of creation, as follows. By Vaisheshikas. They come up from different angles. It's like the kind of like hydras. Cut off one head and then they got another one. Right? It's just they keep going, and by the end of the Vedanta Sutra, all their points have been defeated. But they're also grouped together so that you understand how they work. So if you just deal with one school and then that, then you can see how one school is done, but you won't get the theme. So then this is more of a thematic presentation, because it's the essence of the Vedic.
Vedanta Sutra,
yeah. Because the Upanishads will be making their particular points and this and that, but all the Upanishads together and that, then that'll be Vedanta Sutra. So then they have a particular problem, you know, like establishing in the last chapter you saw about, I mean, last pada, about the position of Prakriti. Right? So then any school that has a problem, you know, with understanding properly Prakriti, then they are dealt with. Does that make sense? So now this is another aspect. Does that make sense? So he's taken all the... means you have the you know, these points, the chit, achit, ishwara, sadhana, and sadhya. Right? These five. And so then those five being there, you have the Vedanta, the actual position of them. Mm-hmm. All these other schools have, some things will be similar, some are different. And so in this way you get all the different schools, because they have some uniqueness that makes them different from the other schools. Right? So then they will all have different ideas about the nature of the soul, the nature of the Lord, the nature of the material world, what is the practices, what is the goal. Does that make sense? And so, because of that, but you can group together various aspects. Certain aspects will be similar. Why? Because they're all coming from the modes. Right? So something that has more ignorance, something that has more passion, something that has more goodness, you can group those together. And then anything in a particular area, then he deals with it all together in the chapter. Or in a pada. Is that sense? Yeah.
Now this is why we call the six resources are sisters two by two.
Sisters?
Yes, I was reading in the beginning of it. It was like there are six resources, but there are three groups of two.
Oh, yes. Sister. Yeah, there'll be similarities there, but there's even sometimes that are more, because one is kind of progressing from the last one. Mm-hmm. So then... in one sense, they also have other things common. It's not that when they move up, when you go to Vaisheshika, they don't use logic.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So those two will be more similar. Shankhya Yoga will be more similar. And Kami Mimamsa and Vedanta will be more similar.
Yes.
But it's not that there won't be principles of the other ones,
yes,
you know,
yes,
shared.
Yes.
You know, Shankhya, because of its presentation, it has to use logic.
Yes.
But instead of working on the micro level, like Vaisheshika, it works on the macro.
Yes.
Right, that'll be the main difference there, but not that other elements won't be have some similarity.
Mm-hmm.
So then they'll come up.
Okay. Maharaj, can we say they are like the six blind men trying to find out anything?
Yes, like that. Yeah. I mean, that is, it's an Upanishadic example, but the Buddhists also use it. So you're getting from Upanishads or the Buddhists?
From our books.
Huh?
From our books.
Oh, from our books, not from Amarchitrakata.
No.
Oh, okay. That's also a regarded, highly regarded shastra. Okay. I think you have to be under 4 foot tall to fully appreciate it. Okay, Vaisheshikas. They claim ether to be eternal. However, the Sutrakar verifies through Shastra conclusions that only Brahman existed prior to the creation. This implies that ether came into being as one of the components in the process of creation. Ether is created because it is an element, and elements have the quality of being created and destroyed. Nonetheless, ether is not like the eternal Atma. Hence, ether is non-eternal and created by Brahman, Adhikarna 1. They claim air to be eternal. However, Sutrakar proves that since it is earlier validated that ether was created, undoubtedly shows that air, which exists within ether, must also have been created. Right, so ether is the basis of air. If ether is created, that means air has to be created. This is so because the component of something must have the same qualities as the whole. Hence, air is non-eternal, Adhikarna 2. They claim water to be eternal. However, the Sutrakar validates through scriptural quotations that fire created water, and hence water is not eternal. They claim earth to be eternal. However, the Sutrakar verifies through Shastra quotes that water created earth, and hence earth is not eternal. Adhikarna 6, footnote 3. Similarly, the Ionian philosophies, Thales, Anaximander, and Anaximenes, tried to... Sounds like Anaximenes is Mexican, no? Tried to explain the origin of the world by accepting one of the material elements as the absolute source of everything without the help of the religion of the Greek demigods. So just, he's taking the elements. So he always sees the Ionians are already starting problems. Like that.
Well, now we know who to blame.
Yes, these guys.
Why the Vaisheshikas have missed out fire? They're going eternal, eternal.
I have no idea. Maybe they have a problem with fire or something. The guy in charge got burnt or something. So they, okay, Shankya. They claim air creates fire. The Sutrakar nonetheless validates that the Shruti statement air creates fire is the primary meaning, and every effect is an act of Brahman is the secondary meaning. If the primary meaning is reasonable, then it should be accepted. This, however, is in harmony with the second meaning. Hence, Brahman is the root cause for the creation of air. So they're saying air creates fire, but they're trying to establish air, therefore, in the eternal position, because it's creating. But it doesn't have to be. One thing comes from the other. You know, we go into the kitchen and create lunch. That doesn't mean that we're eternal. Right? And then, if the lunch creates, let's say, gas, then now the lunch is eternal. Right? Like that. So, no? Okay, Adhikarna 4. They claim occurrence of elements in succession without the intervention of Brahman. However, the Sutrakar verifies that the Lord, desiring to create, enters the elements and initiates a transformation. Hence, the effect is resulted, since the Lord is the cause within the previous source. Adhikarna 7. Right, you see how they're connected? They're kind of similar kind of things, just Vaishikas say that, Shankya said that, so they're kind of, you put them together and deal with them all together. Some other schools claim all words directly signify the import as indicated in the dictionary, and indirectly they may sometimes refer to the Lord. The Sutrakar refutes by emphasizing that one progressively develops the essential intelligence by the study of Shastras, ultimately leading to an understanding that all names are names of the Lord. Right? So on words, that the words signify whatever they are direct meaning to them, it's just how it's used. And then it can sometimes refer to the Lord in that context. But it refers to the object. Well, then Vyasadeva is pointing out, no, it refers to Brahman. And then it may, as a secondary, apply to the object. Because the object is able to do it. Let's say we take table. So they'll take it, the table is, you know, the thing that we, you know, this is the primary meaning. And they probably wouldn't, at least this word, connect to Brahman. But the point is its tableness, why it does, that's Brahman. Right? Then it's able to, this shape is able to do that function. Right? So it's actually a name of Brahman. And then, as a secondary meaning, it can refer to this piece of wood here. But it's not the wood and this and that, it's that Krishna's potency that is there in it, allows it. You put it together in this shape, and it will hold things up. You say, well, it's the wood, you just have a bunch of wood, it doesn't necessarily hold things up. Right? But you put it together as a table, now it will hold things up. So that means that the potency is coming from something else other than wood. Though wood has an ability to be a conduit for that potency. You know, just like metal wire is a conduit for electricity. Mm-hmm. So in the same way is that the wood then is a conduit for the potency of tableness.
Okay? Yes. But now to understand that, we need to be Krishna conscious.
Yes. Conscious. That's the whole point, is because they're not Krishna conscious, that's where all their problems come from.
It's impossible to understand.
Yes. That's the bottom line, is that unless you understand Krishna from the perspective of, surrender and devotion, you won't actually understand the philosophy. Yes. You can get enough that intellectually you can keep yourself busy for your lifetime and argue and this and that and have your convictions or lose them or whatever it is that's important to you. But to be able to actually be situated in a proper understanding that you can apply that into your life, then for developing, that attraction to Krishna, getting you fully out of the material consciousness and into the spiritual consciousness and devotion to Krishna, only devotional service, the association of devotees, can do that. Other things can't do that.
And here, like, they're only seeing the material cause and operative cause. They're not able to see the original cause and the formal cause. So the Brahman.
Yes. Yes.
So we are trying to point out that too. Like, its original cause is the main thing.
Yes. But they don't see. You have to. The materialists can't see these things. Only devotees can see. Because it's revealed. It's not a matter of logic. That's why I was saying before, when you're trying to present it so logical and so nicely, and that's the glory of it. No, that's not the glory. You know, it may be glorious in that field, but that's not the actual glory. Right? The glory is establishing the position of the Lord. Right? Somebody say? Yeah. So that's it. Okay. Some other schools raise a doubt. Quote, if every facet of the creation has an origin, implies Brahman should also have an origin. End quote. The Sutrakar refutes this viewpoint by Shastric citations that describe the Lord as having no root cause, since discarding this conclusion would defy the Shrutis. Adikarna 3. Because otherwise, then they'll come up with, everything has a cause, so that means then Brahman must have a cause. We're just applying our logic onto that, but that's not actually how it works. So then, that was the first Adikarnas, 1 through 8. So Adikarnas 9 through 17, Sutras 16 through 51, refutation of atheistic conclusions on the origin of the jiva. So that was all on the elements, right? The elements and the position of Brahman. So now we deal with the jiva. This section deals broadly with multiple schools, named the Nyayikas, Vaisheshikas, the Shankyites, the Karma Mimamsakas, and the Advaitins. In establishing the fact that the jiva is born on the universal time scale, and thus has perpetual existence, the Sutrakar repertinently justifies the intrinsic attributes of the jiva as follows. Okay, some schools claim that since jiva is an effect, jiva definitely has an origin. This is disproved by quoting shastras justifying the eternality of jivas. The scriptures that state about jiva's creation is only in terms of the jivas having been an effect of the Supreme Lord Shakti. Right, so you're talking on the transcendental platform that the Shakti is there, they're part of that Shakti. There may be a point of their manifestation, but it's not that they didn't exist. They always exist. So, and Nyaya Vaisheshika. They claim Jiva's knowledge and intelligence is the knower. However, the Sutrakar demonstrates through Shastric injunctions that the Jiva is form of logic.
Jiva is form of knowledge.
Where did I get logic? Through Shastric injunction, the Jiva is a form of knowledge, and his Sarup is that of a knower. Since Shrutis reject intelligence as knower, it is not accepted. Right? Because the knowledge or the intelligence is a material element. So how can the intelligence be the knower? Right? It's a machine. It's like a computer. The computer isn't the one who knows. It's the person operating the computer. They know.
Right?
Right?
They might know, they might not know.
Yeah, they might know. Yes.
Jiva is form of knowledge. The
form of knowledge. So the doubt is the form aspect or the knowledge aspect?
Form of knowledge. What do you mean form of knowledge?
What
form?
That's what I was saying. Is it about form or is it about knowledge?
No, about form. How knowledge can have form.
When you say the form of knowledge means they are. No. Just like saying Arjuna is the form of heroism.
Okay, the quality is manifested.
Yeah.
You're
good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, why would Jiva be the emblem of knowledge?
Why? What would you want them to be the emblem of?
Not only knowledge. They are Satchitananda to a minute degree.
But the discussion is about knowledge and intelligence.
Okay.
You know, we've already described that they're eternal. You know, and bliss they're not going to understand, so.
But they claim that Jiva has all the knowledge. That's their claim?
No, they're saying intelligence is the knower.
Mm-hmm.
Jiva's knowledge, intelligence is knower. So intelligence knows the Jiva.
They're a separate entity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You understand? So it gets weird. I was just saying, is that they think too much. You know, it's like you think too much about something, it goes funny. But yeah, so that's all it is. Is they're not connected to the Lord, so then their constant thinking about these things has created, you know, a monster.
Yeah, they should get a job.
Yeah, they should get a job. That would definitely solve the problem. You know, pushing carts around down at Tesco's or something would definitely straighten them out.
Exactly.
Yes, they are making conscious jiva to be unconscious, like knowledge, and unconscious thing intelligence to be conscious.
Yes.
That's what they're teaching.
Yeah, they don't know. It's not that they know the one and they're switching it, they just don't know. Nyayika Vaisheshika Karma Mimamsa. They claim jiva is unconscious. This is refuted by the Sutrakar as follows. One, the very word jiva means consciousness, and hence it is the jiva's very essence. It is unmanifest during deep sleep and manifest on waking, similar to maleness present with the jiva during childhood, but manifests only during adolescence. Two, the jiva's consciousness is eternal, but it can be covered due to being forgetful of the Lord or uncovered by accepting the Lord. And three, jiva being conscious is also conscious. Consciousness is also conscious, since these two states coexist with the jiva, Adhikarna 12. Hence the jiva is eternally conscious. Then the Advaitin Shantya Nyaya Vaisheshika group. Right?
Who's this Advaitin?
Advaitins are the Mayavadis.
Oh. So it's like Vedantas?
Yeah, they're Vedantas, but they're Advaita Vedantas. So then they become Advaitins. You know, just like Madhvacharya, they would be Dvaitins.
So they're non-dual on this one?
Yeah, they're non-dual, but they're exclusive monism. They don't understand that the Lord's also, you know, has variety. They're non-different, but at the same time, there's variety. They only accept the non-difference. Mm-hmm. So we'd be a chinta beta beta tetvig. By that method. Yeah.
We got the longest name.
Yes, we have the longest name. Like that. Yeah, even the Advaitins would be shorter. Yeah. They claim Jiva is all-pervading. Okay. The Sutrakar explains that an all-pervading Jiva has the drawback that the Jiva would be eternally conscious and unconscious, or eternally conscious or eternally unconscious. This is not observed. Right, either be conscious and unconscious at one all the time, or always unconscious or always conscious. The Sutrakar next proves the jiva to be atomic, exact size defined by the shastra to be 1/10,000th the tip of the hair, being infinitesimal. The jiva enters and exits various bodies. This is impossible for an all-pervading jiva, right? Because they'd already be everywhere. You know? And then when you go to reach for something, the other guy who's also all-pervading, no, he wants to go for something else. And then you want your phone, he wants the rocket. It would be a problem.
But there's no problem for the war.
Because he's not reaching for anything. You're doing that. He just sits there.
But he's all-pervading and still deciding.
Yes, because he's God. He can do these things.
And since we can't do, we are not God.
Sorry?
And since we can't do, we are not God.
Yes. Yes. And that was what? And that's what we're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Probably the wind. Three, it's further proved that the atomic jiva occupies a place in the heart and pervades the body via its quality of consciousness. Thus, the aspect of all-pervasiveness is limited to the material body the jiva occupies, Adhikarna 11. Hence, the jiva is not all-pervading. Then with Shankya, they claim Prakriti is the agent and not the jiva. However, the Sutrakar refutes the Shankyites of their mistaken concepts as follows. Prakriti cannot be the agent, since an all-pervading Prakriti's contact with an all-pervading jiva, which they claim, would result in unlimited joy or suffering for all the jivas. Jiva would no longer be the enjoyer, Prakriti would be the enjoyer. This is unseen. Hence, Prakriti is not the agent. Mm-hmm. Right, it's just practical stuff. It's, you know, who's enjoying the sandwich? You are the sandwich. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know. It means it's in the position of it, but that's the whole point. It's dead matter, you know, because all those different things when it comes to rasa. But it's the Lord who is beyond, but he's not getting involved. But they're not taking it that far because they don't know the Lord. They don't understand these things like that. So just within their own logic, I mean. Scriptures give instructions on performance of activities to the conscious jiva, and not unconscious Prakriti. Hence, the jiva is a performer by means of prana, in fetching the results. Not only the bound jiva, but even the liberated jiva continues to be the architect of his actions deriving bliss. This ability of the jiva arises from the Supreme Lord, Adhikarna 14. Thereby it is proved that jiva is the agent. Advaitins. They claim equivalence between the jiva and the avatars of the Lord. The Sutrakar refutes the opposition's above viewpoint by citing the example of sun and firefly. Both are expansions of light, but one is infinitely great and the other is infinitesimally small. The smallness of the jiva makes him incomplete. Thus, the jiva's incompleteness subjects him to bondage and liberation, whereas the avatars are eternally liberated. Therefore, the jiva is termed as vidinamsa, separated part and parcel, and the avatar is termed as swamsa, direct expansion, Adikarna 16.
Gita, regarding the previous point of jiva being the agent, Gita has mentioned five factors of action. So, jiva is one of them, deva is one, and other three appears to be also prakriti, the place of action, endeavor, and the sense. So, when where did we mention jiva is the agent, then what is the main thing? Jiva is the main person responsible for action. That's what we are bringing up.
The point is, okay, we take this rock. With this rock, we are hitting the pot. Who hit the pot?
Stone was hit.
Yeah, bad stone. So, the stone did it or I did it? So then, why does it matter how many? But if I take a handful of stones and hit the pot, is it by volume that it? So you're following in the footsteps of the Ionians. That it's volume that matters. Yes? Okay. They claim the jiva to be the Lord, right? Because if he's the avatars, then he can be the Lord, right? Because that's what they're trying to get at. The relationship between the Lord and the jiva is that of creator-creator, master-servant. This huge difference in the status between the two indicates the jiva's subordination to the Lord. Nonetheless, the jiva, being a shakti of the Lord, belongs to the purusha that possesses it. Hence the shakti, jiva, can never become the purusha, Lord, Adikarna 15. Thus the Sutrakar proves that the jiva has no prospects of becoming the Lord. Sorry. There just aren't any. We've done the calculation, you know, all the research, and it appears there are no prospects. So you're going to have to take that one off of your bucket list.
Scientist wanted to bring out one particular law encompassing all the laws, and the one in the wheelchair. After a lot of research, finally said, we are very happy to announce that the eternal search for this particular law will continue.
John. Yes. And was there a celebration in the scientific community when that was stated? Some other schools claim that all jivas are alike. The Sutrakar refutes this viewpoint by verifying that the jivas share the same spiritual nature, however they are different since their karmas are different. These karmas then determine the jiva's experience of heaven or hell. Hence the jivas are not identical. The differentiating factor being their destiny, Adikarna 17. Thus the above paragraph summarizes the Sutrakar's proof that Brahman is the origin of elemental creation and the jiva.
Alright?
Yes.
When we say about the liberated jiva, the pure jiva, can we say they are identical?
Same point. They share the same spiritual nature,
yes.
But they're an individual. They're basically trying to say they're not individuals. So in other words, whatever school is that, they've had some really bad experience with people.
Yes.
They just want to say they're all the same, and then you don't have to deal with it.
In that meaning, destiny means not the destiny for a conditioned soul. This karma means...
This karma means you see here, because all this philosophy they're applying to which soul? Right? It'll be the souls here.
Yes.
They don't even know about the spiritual world. So
yes.
It's not even a discussion for them.
Yes.
So for them, they're only dealing with the material world.
Yes.
Because they can't know what's beyond. Without devotion, you can't know. So all these schools, none of them are devotional. So they cannot know, you know, beyond. So all they can understand of the absolute truth is the eternality and unchanging. Therefore, then, that's the only concept of spiritual. And then that means all the things that happen in the creation all have to be attributed to the soul and material nature. And so that's going to create all this confusion. Therefore, the soul is eternal, or, you know, the material nature is conscious, or it's, you know, its manifestation is eternal, or all these things, because they're trying to take qualities that apply to the Lord and apply them to the soul and the material nature. So that's how all the difficulties come up, is because they're taking two out of three, right, and taking the lesser of the, you know, leaving out the Lord, who is the big factor, and doing with the lesser. So you're dealing with the created, not the creator. Yes. Then you try to make the created into creators.
Yes.
Yes. So then that. You know, it's like saying the key to your car is the source of creation of the car. It's by the key, then you see it work. So the key is actually the main. Right? But, you know, what you're forgetting is that you're holding the keys and turning them. That's why the car works.
Different perspective.
That works for everybody? Or do we just have to say, you push a button and therefore it works? Or you say, you know, start, and therefore then it works? So, no? We're good with keys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And also those
here,
you know, the wires.
Oh, yes.
The wire goes to work.
Yeah, the wire is the source.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Maharaj, when you were telling that all these schools are answering two questions basically. Like, is there a permanent source of happiness? And how do I connect to it?
That's what they're looking for. But they don't answer, because they if you don't know what you're dealing with, how will they answer? You know what I'm saying? These schools don't answer. That's the problem. Because only bhakti can answer that. The Sutrakar indicates that Adikarnas 1, 2, and 4 through 7 deal with the creation of Pancha Mahabhuta. Adikarna 1, ether is created. Vyad ut patya dikaranam. Sutra reference 2.3.1.2.6. Adikarna Prakashita. Here in this Adikarna, the Vaisheshikas claim ether to be eternal. The Sutrakar proves Brahman as the source of ether. Previous to this, in Vedanta Sutra 1.1.22, akashas talingat, and Vaidyanta Sutra 1.3.41, Akashor Tantaratvadi Vyapadeshat. On the topic of Akash, it was established that Akash is Brahman, and this Akash is the cause of ether. Right? So, in actuality, if we're trying to say ether is the cause, or it's eternal, that's because we're taking it that the word Akash actually is talking about ether rather than the Lord. Right? Because the Lord, He is Akash, therefore then the material element, ether, can carry that potency. Does that make sense? However, the opponents argue that creation of ether is figurative and ether is eternal. Right? So that's just the way, oh, it's just figurative. You know, it's just like, how do you say? There's something in Bhagavatam, like, let's say, like Puranjana. And so then Puranjana, the story is quite, how do you say, starkly revealing material life, right? And material, you know, endeavor, attachment, and like that. So it's done through an analogy. Right? Analogy or metaphor?
Allegory.
But then, some will, trying to remove the importance of the points being made, trying to lessen them, will say, oh, it's just an allegory. But no, the allegory is a method used to explain the points. Because he's talking to a king who doesn't actually necessarily understand or want to hear these things. He's a Karmakandi. So So that means he's a sense enjoyer. So then it's explained through a story, and then in that story, then he can, you know, see with time that it's him, but it hasn't been said it's him. So he'll understand, others may not. So then it's just a method to explain it. Right? So that's the proper way of using them. But then the same principle, just saying, oh, it's an allegory. Here they'll just say, oh, it's just figurative. It's not real. So they're just doing the same thing. Things that they can't explain, they can't understand or deal with or are not interested in apply, they'll just say, oh, it's figurative. So that's why you have to go by what the acharyas say. Right? However, the opponent's argument the creation of ether is figurative and ether is eternal. To this, the Sutrakar replies that it's illogical to say that all elements, fire, water, food, except ether, are literal and only ether is figurative. The scriptures say that ether is eternal, then it is simply figurative because the scriptures also speak of the creation and destruction of ether. It was previously verified in Vedanta Sutra 1.4.14. Karanatvena chaka shadisu yata vyapadish toktehe, that Brahman alone can be determined as the cause of the universe, since Brahman is stated to be the cause of ether and other items mentioned, according to the descriptions of Brahman in the texts. Therefore, when the scriptures mention of the existence of Brahman alone at the beginning of creation, one cannot deny the reality that ether never existed, but was brought into existence by the inconceivable powers of the Lord. Right? So, in other words, what's figurative? Like it's said that the Brahman is created, there was nothing but Brahman in the beginning. So now, if at some point the scriptures say Brahman is eternal, that's the figurative. Not take the Brahman as eternal, as that's fact, and then the creative part, and coming from Brahman, that is the figurative. You understand? Brahman will talk about, let's say, the eternality of ether, because everything's accommodated, it goes on forever, things come and go. It means whatever is there, it manifests and is, you know, created, manifests, maintains, and destroys all within ether. Ether remains. So from that, figuratively, you could say ether is eternal. But still, ether is created by the Lord, so it's not eternal. But in comparison with everything else in the universe, then it's that. Does that make sense? But it's based on false ego, so then you could say false ego is eternal. Thank God. Okay? So it's just a matter of, due to the mode of ignorance, then they switch. Which is which in which position. You know, what's important they make is not important, what's not important they make important, or what's primary they make secondary, what's secondary they make primary. Is that yeah, like that. So that's what's happening. So to be able to distinguish what is the difference between matter and spirit, Bhagavatam is then pointing out that's actual knowledge. Not that it's that they're using intelligence and coming up with so many ways that they're using the words. That's not necessarily, that's the mechanical intelligence. But that's not actual intelligence. You know what I'm saying? Like you can take your car and in the parking lot, then you can sit there and for, you know, 10 minutes do donuts. Right? But that's not the actual use of a car. Right? Does that make sense? So in the same way as they're taking the intelligence, come up with these philosophies, and argue with each other over them. But that's not the real use of intelligence. The real use is how to be engaged in the Lord's service. Understanding our position, our relationship with the Lord, how to engage in service. That's actual.
But now in the material world, it's always never actual intelligence.
No, never.
Yeah.
That's the point. Only the devotee is intelligent. Yeah. That's why it says that the materialist doesn't actually have any good qualities. The modes of nature may manifest different things, but the living entity and their consciousness don't have. It's the modes that, like we say, knowledge is coming from the mode of goodness. So they may be have more quality of goodness in them, therefore we'll say they're the better, you know, person. There's someone more passion, then that's okay. More aggressive, but you know, that then ignorance will say is less. But it's not actually attributed to the soul. It's just their experience in wanting to, you know, separately enjoy the material nature. Then when you have devotion, a devotee, then the soul is actually developing those qualities.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually manifesting those qualities.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the specialness.
Mm-hmm. So. Otherwise, all the material world is conceived that to enjoy and control and to follow one of these philosophy or mixing.
Yes, anything like that. There's no come up with these things. It's not that people don't, even in the contemporary environment, just, you know, somebody comes up with these things.
Yeah.
It's just not enough to make it into a school.
Yeah.
You know, they'll have one little saying or something, and that's their whole life is like that. And, you know, it's like what it is. You know, like let's say, I'll try anything once. You know, so then he's the guy that's, you know, will go first and, you know, check it out, do the new thing, this and that, and that becomes his identity. You know, so it's not enough to be a full, complete philosophy. But, you know, whatever. It's his philosophy.
Right.
I tried to be normal once. Yeah, well, it happens. Unless you have good association, you won't continue in devotional service. Right? Because that's being normal, right? Devotee is normal. A summary of Adhikarana 1. Vishaya. Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1-4 explains. Only Sat alone existed in the beginning. The Sat willed, let me be many, may I produce offspring. Sat produced fire. Fire willed, may I be many, may I produce offspring. Fire produced water. Water willed, may I be many, may I produce offspring. Water produced grains. In this way, it is clearly shown that fire, water, and grains were created. Shamshaya. Was ether created or not? Purvapaksha. Because the Shruti Shastra does not mention any creation of ether, therefore ether was never created, but was always existing. Right? Unless you go down to exact details, you know, like that. You know, it's like... materialists, you know, is not an ideal situation. Because that was general, you didn't say this specific materialist, so he's okay.
Yeah.
Srila Vyasadeva addresses the above as follows. Sutta 231. Na vidyad ashrutehe. Not vidyad, ether, ashrute, because of not being described in the Shruti Shastra. So, ether is not produced because it is not mentioned in Shruti. Right? So that's there. There.
What about chocolate?
Hmm? Chocolate.
It's also not mentioned in Shruti.
That's a good point. So is chocolate eternal? Is that all chocolate or are just certain chocolates?
Okay.
Huh?
It has to be investigated.
So then you'll have to go through the process of niti. So that might take a while to eat all the chocolates in the world.
And use somebody else's experience as well.
Yeah, you can document it, because otherwise then you'll have to be there in Peru eating chocolate out of that guy's bathtub in the backyard. Just to see whether it's eternal or not. Sutta Prakashika, the opponent's viewpoint is as follows. Sri Govindabhasya, ether is eternal. Why is it not produced? Oh, it is not produced. Why? It is not mentioned in the section dealing with the production of elements in Chandogya Upanishad. That section mentions the production of fire, water, and food, but not of ether. Therefore, it is not produced. right? So that's their how their logic is working. So this then starts the Adhikarana. So there's six verses. So then, you know, giving their point, and then we'll deal. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:3. Sri Antariksha said, O mighty armed king, by activating the material elements, the primeval soul of all creatures has sent forth all living beings in higher and lower species, so that these conditioned souls can cultivate either sense gratification or ultimate liberation, according to their desire. So he's sent all, it means he's caused the creation, so the living entities then can cultivate sense gratification or ultimate liberation, right? Because liberation is also sense gratification, right? It's just it's sense gratification through getting rid of everything rather than sense gratification by interacting.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So Sutra 232. So ultimate liberation means devotional service. Sutra 232. Asti tu. Asti is tu indeed. Ether also has an origin. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar quotes Taittiriya Upanishad in order to establish the origin of ether. It was previously demonstrated in Vedanta Sutra 1.4.14. Karanatvena chaka shadishu yata ya padish toptehe. That Brahman alone can be determined as the cause of the universe, since Brahman is stated to be the cause of ether and the other items mentioned, according to the descriptions of Brahman in the texts. Sri Govinda Bhasya. The word tu indicates a removal of doubt. Ether has asti, an origin, though it is not mentioned in Chandogya Upanishad. Ether's creation is mentioned in Taittiriya Upanishad as follows. Tasmat va e tasmat atmana akasha sambhutaha akashat vayur vayur agnihi agner apo. We're missing something here. Okay. Mahati Prithiviti. From Brahman came ether. From ether came air. From air came fire. From fire came water. And from water came the great earth. Right? So then, in the Chandogya Upanishad, there's something specific that they're dealing with.
Yes.
The presentation. Therefore, they don't mention all of them. When they're mentioning the creation of elements, then they'll mention all five.
Yes.
But otherwise, because you saw it ended at grains.
Yes. Yes.
So then, from that, then what happens? Then what happens? Then you eat grains.
Yes.
Then that means the life is there. Then from the grains, then you perform yajna, right?
Yes.
You know, from the yajna, then you go to the heavenly planets.
Yes.
Then from the heavenly planets, you finish, you fall down, you become grain, right? From the grain is eaten, that becomes semen. Semen's injected in the womb. Then you get another living entity who then starts the cycle of karma,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? So it's talking about that circle. Because
yes.
The Upanishads also discuss that. Is that why get involved in that? You go for the ultimate liberation. So they're just taking that out of context and then trying to say that the creation. Does that make sense? But it's not. They're not discussing the full creation. They're just discussing how much is necessary to establish this cycle of the person performing yajna. How they're here, they perform yajna, they go to heavenly planets, then they come back here, then they go back to the heavenly planets, and like that they just go around and around.
They're taking a text out of the context.
Yes, out of the context.
So, Maharaj, when we about the Vedanta Sutra, about the language, every school accepts the same meaning, as a part of SP2?
Vaishnavas, basically. I mean, sometimes they'll put the verses together differently. Like we have, means all the words will be there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just where you break them. So we have 555 sutras.
Yeah.
Like that. But other schools have, you know, 20 more if you let it like this. So it just depends upon where they, like sometimes you see apostrophes like that. So it's just where they put those, how they put them together. So you might have three sutras as two sutras or two sutras as three. This depends how you want to bring out the meaning.
But the meaning with the word are the same in each school?
Same, the word means like asti is two indeed. Is it same? He's asking. It has to be same because it's Sanskrit. Is that?
Means the word there, but then how they'll apply it, that might be different.
Yes. Yes.
Because the whole argument is on the words itself, and even on the letters that they're fighting.
Mm-hmm. That's what is the interpretation.
Yes. It'll be Vaishnav, so there'll be no disagreement on who's God and who's, you know, the Jiva and like that. But the relationship between and that interaction, that might be different. That's taste. Mm-hmm. So that'll be, you know, Dwait, Vishishta Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait, Dwait Advait.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you'll get that difference, but you won't get a difference in the definition of the Jiva, definition of the Lord, definition of material energy. That you're not going to get. You know, because that's all we're discussing here, because they don't actually have a sadhana for getting out of the material world.
Mm.
So technically the sadhana and sadhya, you can't, it's not a major discussion.
Mm.
It's just these three, the soul, the material energy, and the Lord. The philosophy means you're discussing these three. Some people might just try to discuss something else, but unless you know these three, what's the meaning of those?
Mm.
You know, it's like, where are you taking? If you don't know what the soul is, what's the meaning of a process of elevation? What's being elevated?
Mm.
Right? Blood pressure or, you know what I'm saying? So you don't, if unless they define it, you don't actually know what is happening. What does that mean? Because if you don't know the soul, then you don't know the material energy, then you end up with these, you know, things of eternal damnation or things like that.
Mm.
Now, it's not that you can say that it's a correct perspective if you're using the perspective of karma. Because eternal damnation just means it's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as, it means it's just like, let's say, being in a situation that's uncomfortable to you seems like forever. So it's not a problem using that if you're referring to karma. Right? But if we're referring to the actual nature of the soul, then that's eternal, and so their natural position is in association with God.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be based on sense gratification, which heaven is. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Telling Chit, Achit, Ishwar, Sadhana, and Sadhya. These five groupings are like, what is the like, purpose of this grouping?
Purpose.
Yeah.
So that you understand what you're dealing with, means the soul, they understand their position, and then what process to use to elevate themselves to the love of God. That's what it's called.
Another form of that sambandha vidya.
Yes. It's just sambandha is just you're giving chitta to Vishwas. And then you have abhideya, then you have prayojan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you have to define the sambandha, then you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Bhagavatam, verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26-32. When egoism in ignorance is agitated by the sex energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the subtle element sound is manifested. And from sound come the ethereal sky and the sense of hearing. Persons who are learned and who have true knowledge define sound as that which conveys the idea of an object, indicates the presence of a speaker screened from our view, and constitutes the subtle form of ether. Footnote 4, Srila Prabhupada comments. It It appears from this verse that all the objects of our sense gratification are the products of egoism and ignorance. It is understood from this verse that by agitation of the element of egoism and ignorance, the first thing produced was sound, which is the subtle form of ether. It is stated also in the Vedanta Sutra that sound is the origin of all objects of material possession, and that by sound one can dissolve this material existence. Anavriti Shabdat means liberation by sound. The entire material manifestation began from sound, and sound can also end material entanglement if it has a particular potency. The particular sound capable of doing this is the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna. Our entanglement in material affairs has begun from material sound. Now we must purify that sound in spiritual understanding. There is sound in the spiritual world also. We approach that sound, then our spiritual life begins, and the other requirements for spiritual advancement can be supplied. We have to understand very clearly that sound is the beginning of the creation of all material objects for our sense gratification. Similarly, if sound is purified, our spiritual necessities also are produced in sound. So that's why it's very important what sound you're hearing. So if you're hearing transcendental sound, that will have an elevating effect. If we're hearing other sounds, then that will have a contaminating effect. So the material is sitting around talking about material things. That just makes them more materially entangled. Here it is said that from sound, the ether became manifest, and that the air became manifest from ether. How the ethereal sky comes from sound, how the air comes from sky, and how fire comes from air will be explained later on. Sound is the cause of sky, and sky is the cause of shrotram, the ear. The ear is the first sense for receiving knowledge. One must give oral reception to any knowledge one wants to receive, either material or spiritual. Therefore, shrotram is very important. The Vedic knowledge is called shruti. Knowledge has to be received by hearing. By hearing only can we have access to either material or spiritual enjoyment. In the material world, we manufacture many things for our material comfort simply by hearing. They are already there, but just by hearing one can transform them. If you want to build a very high skyscraper, this does not mean we have to create it. The materials for the skyscraper, wood, metal, earth, etc., are already there, but we make our intimate relation with those already created material elements by hearing how to utilize them. Modern economic advancement for creation is also a product of hearing. And similarly, one can create a favorable field of spiritual activities by hearing from the right source. Arjuna was a gross materialist in the bodily conception of life. He was suffering from the bodily concept very acutely. But simply by hearing, Arjuna became a... Simply by hearing, Arjuna became a spiritualized Krishna-conscious person. Hearing is very important. And that hearing is produced from the sky. By hearing only can we make proper use of that which already exists. The principle of hearing to properly utilize preconceived materials is applicable to spiritual paraphernalia as well. We must hear from the proper spiritual source. Right? So by hearing, then we'll go. So it's come from ether. Right? So the ether is produced, and then from there you get everything else. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.